Money FM 89.3, best of prime time.
This is Prime Time on Money FM 89.3. I'm Rachel Kelly. Now, a story that we've been closely monitoring over the last few days is the COVID-19 diagnosis of US President Donald Trump. And to get the latest, we're joined today by Derek Wolbank, and he's a senior editor at Bloomberg. Derek, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Rachel.
It's our pleasure. Now, Derek, let's first start off with President Trump's current state of health, because we now understand that he'd been treated with oxygen on Friday. We're still unclear on his date of diagnosis. What else do we know at the moment?
Well, we know that President Trump is somewhere nearing the end of the first week of his having COVID-19. The exact details of when he was first diagnosed, a lot of those things, as you mentioned, are still coming forward. It has been very difficult to get accurate information on the president's condition. Some of that is a little bit because White Houses generally are loath to say that the president is having difficulty. Some of that is particular to this White House, though, it must be said. Mm. He's currently at Walter Reed Medical Center, which is a phenomenal U.S. military medical center in the capital area in the United States. So he's under medical care there. But this is a president who very much is resistant to staying in one little room at one time, and that's proving to be a bit of a challenge.
And we've seen that evident with the trip, Trump's trip out of the hospital as well. And he's drawn some criticism for that move. And we've also had a number of broadcast messages from the hospital from President Trump. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, it really is. It really was an unusual sort of moment because President Trump decided that he wanted to go pay a visit, a surprise visit, to some of his supporters who had showed up near the hospital. So mm-hmm. What he did is he got into the presidential limousine and he went out and he waved at people through the window. Now, the difficulty with that is that President Trump is at what people who have studied COVID have said is near the peak of its virality. Mm-hmm. And he went inside a vehicle that is designed to be impregnable to attack. And when I mean that, I mean, if you were to launch chemical munitions near this vehicle, it could continue unimpeded because it's got its own air circulation. And as we know very well, because we've been dealing with this virus for a long time, one of the things that you want in eliminating spread is a lot of air movement. Well, there is zero air movement in here. So the White House is taking a lot of criticism right now for putting the Secret Service, which is in charge of protecting the president, in danger by having people ride around in this hermetically sealed vehicle with the president while he has a confirmed case of COVID-19.
We've spoken about the state of health of the president, but you know, there has been some talk as well that the treatment plan that he's currently undergoing may suggest that his COVID-19 may be more severe than the White House is indicating at the moment.
That's right. It's really hard to get a good read on where this is exactly. If you were to look at some of the medications that the president is taking and one were to ask oneself, what does that mean? There are some medications he's taking that are usually for people who are in a much more serious condition. At the same juncture, this White House has tried very hard to downplay the president's condition. The president has released multiple videos of himself ostensibly working at the White House, has tweeted repeatedly since he's been at Walter Reed. And so there's this sort of difficulty in assessing the condition, because you have on the one hand some of these some of these reports that say everything's fine and magical and wonderful. Mm-hmm. But at the same point, you're not in an inpatient healthcare situation if everything is fine and magical and wonderful. And given the fact that it is hard to kind of get a read of what's going on, I think that a lot of people are reading into a lot of situations. Now, I think that quite frankly, this may just be quite straightforward. You're talking about an older gentleman in his 70s, someone who is a fairly large individual, And both of those two things are complicating factors for COVID. So it is not unusual that somebody in his situation who would be considered more of a risk case for a virus like this would get extra attention. Plus, he's the president of the United States. But when you sit there and you say, well, we're not quite sure that we can say what's coming out of the White House is 100% accurate, then it leaves a lot of things to the imagination.
We're speaking with Derek Wallbank, senior editor at Bloomberg. Derek, tell us then, what are we looking at when it comes to contact tracing at the moment? And there's been nonstop footage of the Rose Garden event, but how far does this go?
Well, you're going to have, you know, obviously everybody who was at the Rose Garden event to unveil Supreme Court nominee Amy Coney Barrett is somebody who has been contact traced immediately. And most of those folks we have started hearing from to say, I've tested positive, I've tested negative, et cetera. But you're also talking about anyone who is involved in the White House in the days since that event. And that is a much larger situation. From what we understand, the contact tracing for that is still very much ongoing. That is a process. And then getting those tests. And in the United States, the tests don't necessarily all come back within an hour or two. You might be talking about a couple days in certain scenarios. So it really is a developing process to see sort of how widespread this is. Now, multiple U.S. lawmakers have tested positive, and that brings up a whole host of other complications, because just down the road at the U.S. Capitol, there is far less in the way of mandatory testing, in the way of screenings, than there might be at the White House. And a lot of people have been nervous for a while that if COVID-19 became a real big thing at the U.S. Capitol, then it would be particularly vulnerable, because in that scenario, you are talking about 500 plus lawmakers who go back to their home districts, who deal with things in their home districts, and then fly into Washington or drive into Washington to conduct the nation's business in the Capitol. That is a lot of out and in. That gets to a lot of spread very quickly. And so part of what is going on right now is an assessment to try and see how bad this spread has been. There is some indication that the events at the White House might be the biggest spread event in the District of Columbia, in the capital city, for quite some time.
And let's talk about next steps, Derek, because let's not forget we're in the midst of the campaign period for the upcoming U.S. elections. How much of an impact has this had? Joe Biden's come out to say, Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden has come out to share that he's tested negative multiple times for COVID-19. We've got the VP debates coming up this week. Then we were expected to have another presidential debate next week.
Well, I think it's had a big effect, and it's going to, and the effect could be even bigger than we know right now. I mean, look, I feel like every answer that I'm giving you is some amount of This is slightly unprecedented, and here's the history where we are. But that's kind of the situation we find ourselves in, isn't it? We are less than a month to the U.S. election. U.S. elections take a very, very long time compared to international elections. They just do. But we're talking about less than a month, so this is really the crunch time. There is a vice presidential debate that's supposed to happen later this week between the Democrat Kamala Harris and the incumbent Republican Vice President Mike Pence. Mike Pence so far is negative. Mike Pence, I think a lot of efforts are being made to make sure he stays that way. Mm-hmm. But theoretically, that debate is going forward with a couple of additional safety precautions, like additional space between the candidates. Now, when you talk about the next presidential debate, there are three total. One has already happened, two are yet to come. The next presidential debate is supposed to be the week after. Whether that happens or how that might happen, I think are still very much live questions, because this is simply an unprecedented situation. It's supposed to happen. It's supposed to take place in the critical key swing state of Florida. that's when the next debate is supposed to be. That's where it's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. But will it happen? It's hard to say because, I mean, I've covered U.S. politics for well more than a decade now, and I feel like I've seen a lot of things, but this is all very unprecedented. When people like myself are really unsure about what's mm-hmm. going to happen, everyone who's watching the process, who's in markets, who's trying to figure out where to place money and how to react, just the level of volatility that you see across the entire space here just cannot be overstated.
And that said, Derek, I mean, you've mentioned there that there are going to be additional measures put in place for the VP debates should they go ahead this week. I mean, they've said that they are expected to go ahead this week. And, you know, it was just as recent as a week ago that Trump was saying that COVID-19 was under control and how quickly things have changed. Do you think that this will change perceptions in the U.S. and could we see additional measures implemented?
Well, I think that there's polling in the field right now in critical swing states where we'll start to see what the effect of President Trump's diagnosis is in terms of political polls. We'll start to see that later this week. So we'll have a better answer then. I do think that COVID is maybe the number two election issue mm-hmm. going on right now behind the economy. But the economy is linked to the virus. And indeed, you can make a really compelling argument that you don't solve the economy until you solve the virus. Right now in polling, we are told that voters generally, by a very narrow margin, give Donald Trump the edge on the economy, but they give Joe Biden the edge on the virus. And to the extent that you don't believe that the virus is under control, that is something that works toward Biden's political benefit right now. If for some reason the virus was seen to be under control, there was a trajectory towards stability, et cetera, like that, then that would be something where Trump could say, look, the actual place we're in right now maybe is not where I want it to be because of all of, you know, all of these external reasons, but at least our trajectory is going the right way. If people do not assess that the trajectory is going the right way, if the assessment is that the White House has bungled the response for months and months and months, then that is a vote toward Joe Biden. And it's a vote not just on economy, but it's also a vote on personal security because people are thinking about their health, their parents' health, their children's health.
And Derek, while we're talking about the U.S. elections and the updates on U.S. President Donald Trump, I mean, COVID-19 really is a global issue. And last week, deaths passed 1 million globally. How far do experts expect the numbers to go by year end? And under what circumstances? Some reports have said that numbers could be close to 3 million by the end of the year.
Yeah, it's really hard to game this out. I've seen, just like you have, a lot of projections as to where this sort of thing could happen. I think that it's really, really hard to assess. And the reason that it's hard to assess is because this is not a virus that's impacting everywhere the same way. If somehow this gets under control, if some of the therapies, if some of the vaccines really do start making some progress and things start coming online, then it's possible that the projection won't be as bad. Over the last couple of months, the rate of increase has been a lot lower than it was in the sort of April to July window. So it's possible, as I say, that exponential rise might curb somehow. But at the same juncture, when you're talking about South America, you're talking about India, you're talking about the United States, those are three very, very big population centers, and there could be more room to run here.
Well, Derek, you know, there is just so much to discuss and so much happening at the moment, but unfortunately, that's all we've got time for. But thank you so much for sharing your insights with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Derek Wolbank, senior editor at Bloomberg.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.